You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a vibrant spiritual community committed to individual and collective awakening through sacred teachings and practices. One God, one heart, many paths.
Would you please join me in prayer? Beloved one, we give thanks for you, for this time together, for this sacred community, and for each other. We open ourselves and turn toward your divine presence. We know that this time is holy and sacred, and we are grateful for your many blessings upon us today and every day. Amen.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's so nice to be back at Unity Tustin. It's been quite a few years, and I always have loved coming here. I met Marge Britt many years ago when I was in grad school at UC Irvine, and we just struck up a wonderful connection and friendship back then, and did a couple events together. God, that was really many moons ago, back in the mid-late 90s, believe it or not. And I've always felt a special connection with this place, so it's wonderful to be here. So what do I want to speak to you about? In certain ways, I always speak about the same thing. Let's see how many different ways I can say the same thing. Ever-present, discovering what's always here. I sometimes say, I think I begin this book that I just came out with in the fall with a chapter that I call Two Approaches to Happiness, Two Approaches to Well-Being. And I think that's a good place to kind of start what I want to share with you this morning. So in that piece that I wrote, I kind of lay out these two, you could say, two paths to well-being. In the first, which is the most familiar to us as humans, we've been sort of conditioned, I guess, to that path, to satisfaction, well-being, fulfillment, and so on. And that's the path of bringing into our life, finding ways, I kind of call it the art of living, in a sense, skillful, artful living, and that is sort of manifesting, bringing into our lives those, as many experiences and circumstances as we can that are sort of in accord with what we most love and value and find enjoyable and pleasurable. And that can look different from person to person, of course. So in that path to well-being, I try to I create situations and circumstances, relationships, work situations, and so on that I essentially equate with a sense of resonance and fulfillment and well-being. And it's the most natural thing to do, and it's a beautiful path to travel, and there's no reason to not continue to travel that path. An aspect of that particular approach to happiness and well-being, though, is that we do essentially split the world up in a way, which is we have particular experiences and circumstances that we, maybe without even realizing it, kind of associate with well-being. And when those are present, particular kinds of experiences, now we're in it. We're in the groove. We're in the well-being groove. We're feeling it. We're like, oh, I feel so great. And then those were visited by circumstances and experiences that we don't equate with well-being, right? And then we suddenly find like we're out of alignment, we're out of sync, we're out of harmony, we could say, you know, simply put, we're in touch with some measure of discontent or suffering, right? And then what we typically do, understandably, is, okay, we're going to try to rectify that which is not quite synonymous with what we think of as well-being and get more of those experiences and circumstances that we equate with well-being. That's pretty much the norm. That's conventional reality, we could say. And I would say humans are more or less successful at that approach to well-being. It has a lot of built-in limitations. The most obvious that comes to my mind right now is that circumstances and experiences seem not very controllable. right? We all already know that. Doesn't matter how many years we've lived. We already know, like, maybe the limits of control are even greater than we imagine. I've increasingly come to feel that way. I mean, even our internal experience, which a lot of sort of self-help, spiritual kind of practices and approaches sort of, I think, tend to focus on how can we engineer our internal experience in such a way as to feel better, to feel more awake, more fulfilled, and so on, more whole. And it's really difficult to do that. And also, I found over the years of trying to do that, kind of exhausting at the same time. And so is there another approach? And and essentially, that the first approach, just to kind of repeat something I said, is that there's this tendency to distinguish this from that, and in particular as it relates to well-being. Like, this is evidence of well-being, and this is evidence of the lack of well-being. So kind of split it up in that way. If you put it in more spiritual terms, we could say, this is the evidence of God's and spirit being present in my life, and this is the evidence of it somehow being absent, right? So it's kind of a similar thing. I've come to feel that the search for well-being and the search for whatever term we want to give it, spiritual enlightenment, realization, contact with the divine, and so on, is in many ways one and the same search, essentially. So that same description I gave to the search for well-being, we can give to the search for the divine. And so again, there's this tendency in that in that way of approaching it to define it according to the presence or absence of certain circumstances and experiences. But there's another approach. And that approach is to discover the ways in which every experience that we encounter is actually pure, unadulterated wholeness and well-being and divinity. And that means every, not just certain ones, but every. Of course, our descriptions suggest otherwise, right? I mean, from the level of how we describe our experience and characterize it, and this is something I'll be focusing a lot on this afternoon for those who come, looking at the ways we interpret our experience. The way we interpret our experience is that is by distinction and differentiation, right? Like sadness is not happiness, for example, and pleasure is not pain, and clarity is not confusion. They're different, right? And at the level of description, they of course are different. They have a different quality. They have a different flavor to them, right? Sadness has a different flavor than happiness at the level of description. So it stands, just purely logically speaking, that if we're going to discover a well-being that's present in and as all experience, or a divinity that's present in all experience and circumstance, then we have to find something. We have to discover what is common about all experience. Right? Makes sense? Because if we're operating at the level of description and differentiation, then, well, then that's where we're going to be, and we're not in touch with some thread that runs through all experience. So the question then becomes, how do we do that? How do we discover what's common? I think the favorite chapter I wrote in this new book is called The Common Denominator in Everything. I read it the other day, and I thought as I read it, I could have just had the whole book really just be that one chapter. It's only 4 or 5 pages, and it really says everything that I would want to say, in a sense, about all of this. So I'm just going to touch on a few kind of doorways that are really actually incredibly simple to begin to get a sense of this that is common to all experience, and through that, how we can discover what is always present, regardless of how we may be describing our experience. And that turns out, the discovery of that turns out to be, from my standpoint, what liberation is all about, what spiritual liberation is all about. We're essentially liberated from the notion that divinity or well-being could ever possibly be absent, because really, it can't be absent, because it's the very nature of everything. So it's present right now, as this moment, however the moment's being described. But that could just sound like a nice philosophy and maybe an inspiring one, but how do we come to actually recognize that in a way that's transformative and actual and experiential. So I think that the simplest way of accessing this common denominator is to recognize that no matter what's occurring in our experience, no matter how we're describing it, a moment of incredible heartbreak or a moment of unbelievable ecstasy, right? They seem like miles apart, right? And we would, of course, if you go back to approach one to happiness, like which one would we rather have? We would rather have the ecstasy, right? And of course. I like those experiences myself. But again, that's not always what's happening in life. To put it mildly. So, what do those two experiences have in common? Well, those two, ecstasy and heartbreak. This will sound really simple, maybe simplistic, but it's very, very profound to me, and that is that they both exist. There's a term in Buddhism, the suchness of things, and this is my understanding of what that means. The suchness of experience, which is all we ever have to look at, is our experience. There's never anything else to look at. In any of our investigations, what we have is our experience, right? The suchness of our experience is the sheer existence of it, the fact that it's here. Our tendency is to focus on, this is again kind of the conditioning from approach one, how we've been trained up in life in a sense, is to focus on the content of experience. How is it? You know, kind of what's on the TV program? Is it a happy show or one that I really would rather not be happening? Like, that's the program that's on, and we're essentially busy trying to manipulate the content to our liking, right? That's kind of a lot of the human endeavor, really, I think, if we're honest with ourselves. The suchness or the existence of experience that undergirds, that is the common, a common denominator underlying all experience, is, we could say, if I go back to the television metaphor, it's the fact that the TV's on. The TV is on. Now, this is kind of a, to me, sort of amazing thing, but in many respects, we sort of take it for granted that the TV's on. We kind of take for granted that this moment is even occurring. How is this moment here? Like, this is the miracle, that something's here at all. There's no explanation for it. Nobody has an explanation for it. How could we have an explanation for how this is present here? And just feel that for a moment. Feel the fact that this is here. No matter how, you might be feeling like elated or exhausted or inspired or confused by my words. It's like, no matter how you might describe how you are feeling from a content standpoint, just feel the fact that this experience is here, that experience is present. Now, I titled the talk Ever Present, and this is essentially what I'm pointing to. We hear in spiritual circles this idea of, you know, becoming more present, right? Has anyone ever heard that? Like, okay, right. So, and I practiced for many years trying to become more present. And I would say I basically failed at doing that. And pretty miserably failed. And I think there's several reasons for that. Maybe I just wasn't kind of hooked up to do those practices in a way that they were productive. I don't really know. But I think a bigger reason is that one of the primary aspects of experience, and we know this, without having to sit on a meditation cushion for 30 or 40 years, because it's very obvious, is that nothing lasts, and experiences are constantly vanishing, constantly disappearing, right? So this idea of like becoming more present and somehow sustaining that as a sort of a spiritual practice is like, good luck with that. Because that's, you can't, what do you, how can you, you can't sustain anything. Why would you think you could sustain being present? You can't sustain it. But I tried, oh boy, did I try. And it was impossible. And then I would get frustrated. How come, oh, you lost the presence. Come on, get back to the presence. And Yeah, it just didn't work. But thankfully, I discovered through, I don't know, good luck, grace, that no, presence can never be lost. Because presence, well, let me just say, there's two kinds of presences. There's the presence that one can do through efforting and practicing. Like, okay, so right now, tune into the fact that you're present and feel that. Be aware of that. So now you've kind of shifted your focus and you're noticing that. And maybe it feels good to notice that, and it does often feel amazing to notice that. But then that slips away and you're off whatever, doing whatever in your consciousness that you might be doing, traveling wherever you're traveling in your consciousness. But when that happens, not all that's happened is you're just having a different experience. And that different experience that you're having, and it could be everything from having a wonderful daydream and fantasy to ruminating about some difficult event happened, you know, is that what is common about wherever you might go in the field, the vast field of your experience, is that it's present. See, all there is presence. There's the presence of what is. And it looks different from moment to moment, doesn't it? Shows up. I mean, you've already, as you've been sitting here, had a whole range of different thoughts, feelings, and sensations. It's just been like this wild dance, probably, of different experiences. That's life, right? But what's common about it is that it's all present. It's all presence. And so this turns out to be, it may sound simple, it may sound kind of like, well, yeah, so what's the big deal about that? But I invite you to consider and feel how profound that actually is. And notice that, because you may discover, as I have, that that holds just a powerful key to freedom, because whatever it is that we're seeking in life, more divinity, more God, more openness, more love, more freedom, it turns out that all of those things are here already as this ever-present presence. They're here right now. This moment, exactly as it is present. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Another simple way to say essentially the same thing, another way to say the same thing, is that experiences are always different, right, from moment to moment. So if we're looking for something common that we can kind of discover some sort of stable contact with reality, with divinity, with well-being, how can we do that in a world of experience that is just constantly shifting and constantly changing? There's nothing stable, right? So experiences are just, they're unstable. They're not holding still. Things don't hold still because things are alive, right? So where we can find that sustained, consistent, stable thing that we are searching for is in the flow of experiencing itself. That is continuous. When does that ever shut off? That never turns off. That's the TV program. The TV program is always on. It's like, I was thinking about this as I was singing the chant with you. In Indian music, they have if you've watched ensembles playing like kirtan, there's a tambura, do you know this instrument? It's also called the drone. And it's droning away with, usually it's just a fifth musically. And then there's the harmonies happening, the melodies and the rhythm all around, but the drone is like the root, the center. It's like, just the drone, right? That's the continuous stream. And the drone is what's always here, which is your experiencing. It's always here. So you're never, ever apart from that. And it is profoundly liberating to notice that. You can't ever remove yourself from the flow of experiencing. Now again, we can, that's kind of the second approach to well-being, the second approach to discovering divinity, is to recognize the continuous nature of this experiencing, this flow. Always different, and yet always the flow of experiencing, right? That recognition of this continuous flow of experiencing doesn't mean that we can't continue to seek out the things that bring joy, that we associate with joy and pleasure, whether they're relationships or work or pastimes or whatever it is we're doing. Of course, like I still seek out and would prefer things that bring pleasure rather than, like I would prefer that I get a massage rather than be hit over the head with a hammer, right? Like that's natural. I seem as an organism to be wired that way. But in the flow of experiencing, it is all the flow of life itself, the flow of reality, the flow of existence. We could call it God, which is throwing a word really at something that has no words, ultimately. The mystery. The mystery. So just take a moment to kind of feel that. We'll just kind of do that together just for a minute or two. Just let, close your eyes for a moment and notice how dynamic everything is about your experience. Constantly changing, shifting. But feel the steady stream of experiencing itself, the constancy of that. The constancy of being, of life. Life showing up in all the different ways it shows up, but always this drone, this steady flow, relentlessly here. And this is the thing, you can open your eyes now if they were closed, and this is what's always here. Life, existence, reality, call it what we will. It's never, when is it ever absent? Yes, sometimes it looks like pleasure and sometimes it looks like what we would call pain. And if we only stay at the level of the description, we'll never leave that level because we seemed, consciousness seems hardwired to also exist in that realm, the realm of descriptions. But if we only stay there, we'll forever be bouncing from this to that and always looking for our well-being in the ways that we define well-being and then feeling like it's gone and then we have to retrieve it. Same with the search for divinity, same thing. But when we recognize that this ever-present presence is, it's always, always here, we can recognize that that's there. It's sort of like every experience has two aspects, its description and the fact that it is. And I invite you, as you go about your days, and it's something we'll explore this afternoon for anyone who might be interested in coming, we'll explore this in much more depth and have an opportunity to look at how what I'm talking about actually relates to your life, which is, of course, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, to begin to see how this might have implications for our lives, because who cares about it as a philosophy? But I invite you to, as you go about your day and days, to notice this from time to time, this simple thing that you have, the way you're describing your experience, I like this, I don't like it, it's okay, and then the fact that it is. And feel that fact that it is, the presence of it. Notice that. And you may be surprised at what you find by that simple recognition of what the Buddhists call the suchness of things. It's just as simple as the fact that it's here, that it is. The fact that this moment is the revelation. Not how we're describing it, but the fact that it is. That's the miracle. And that we're here. Because we're just an aspect of reality, an aspect of life. How are we doing time-wise, by the way? I've lost track of time.
You're right about there.
I'm good? Okay. that's another thing we'll explore this afternoon is how these things that we, I'll just say kind of briefly a couple of things, is that the essence of the kind of work that I do with people, I call it experiential inquiry, is I invite an investigation, an exploration, experientially, of course, not intellectually, but experientially into the ways in which our actual experience deviates from what we think is going on here. Time is a very good example. We imagine that we live in a world of time, but experientially, we have never, ever experienced time. Because experience always happens when? Where is time? It's not here. So, that, again, it's a funny thing about, we'll also be talking about this afternoon, so many of the spiritual teachings are really set up, they're constructed in such a way as to sound like, or even to argue that there's something that needs to be done to accomplish something like being here now, right? But being here now, as I was sort of hinting at in that meditation, is effortless because it is all that is. All there is ever going on is being here now. When has anything else ever happened but being here now? So even if you're off wondering about the past or the future, you're being here now. So it's unavoidable. Reality, divinity, the mystery, God, call it what we will, is not something we must do something about to get ourselves into. It's just the unavoidable fact of every instant. This is God. There's nothing but. So see how easy that is? All right. Oh.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.